social media platforms that you could have a name attached to. And I was like, I wonder if Geeksmithing is one that would be available. And it was. And that then I bought the domain name that night.
What's up, Internet? It's time to take off your day pants and put on your geek pants. Let's get intimate with Swiss Swain. Wes Swain, dang it.
Swiss Swain?
I gotta do it again. Oh!
No.
I had such good momentum too. It's time to get intimate with Wes Swain on here on the Making Beats Geeks podcast.
Making Beats.
Now Making you're in my Beats head.
Podcast.
Yes.
Wicked, wicked.
The After Hours podcast for makers, families, and geeks. Oh, I'm fired.
Man, this thing went off the rails faster than the M-Train in Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm. So, how's it going, guys? Long time no see.
Oh, so we're just going with that, okay.
Oh, we're just going with that? I guess so. I would love to do it again.
No, you lost your
this
chance.
This is so on brand for our show anyway. Why not just stick with it?
We're just giving the authentic experience that our audience desires.
So we're giving that one-to-one real kind of like a version of what this is like instead of the manufactured social media, you know, version.
Exactly.
Yeah. 100% real. So what have you guys been up to? I feel like I haven't talked to you guys forever. It's been like 3 weeks, I think.
Been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm keeping my Glowforge busy. With lots of ornament creation of all kinds. And I figured, and I still haven't even done a video on the Glowforge, which is sort of annoying because I wanted to have one out sooner. But also, I think it's a good test of this unit before I actually, like, say what I think about it. I actually have some time in it, right? And actually figure out some of the quirks and some of the annoyances and stuff like that. So it's definitely not going to appear pristine in the video like I originally wanted, like a brand new Glowforge should. But yeah, I've just been using that a lot, breaking out the paint pens and Christmas ribbons and whatnot. And so I've been doing a lot of this. I probably made and shipped like 30 so far, which is not a lot, but it's all relative, I guess.
Yes, it's all relative. Like I said, I'm proud of you, Wes. You've been doing good work. It's inspiring me. So is your video going to be like a review of the Glowforge, or like what kind of format are you going to do for your first Glowforge video?
The first one, I think I'm going to talk about, like, just reveal that I bought one, and then, you know, like sort of say like a lot of the people that are following this channel probably found me originally from a K40 laser review video.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to sort of explain my decision-making process of why I bought one.
So are you going to title it, I Sold Out?
Yes.
Actually, if my YouTube recommended feed is any indication, what you should title it is How to Make $5,000 in Your First Week of Order of Owning a Glowforge, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yep, all you have to do is get 30 referrals, and you got it.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going a lot of review videos, stuff of products, they start with the unboxing, you know, when they get the thing. But mm-hmm. I'm going to do one where I start like one step before that and actually cover like the ordering process and like the customer experience from ordering and like deciding what to get through it showing up, like the step before that you see most people cover, because there's actually interaction and things that happen there that I thought brought a lot of clarity as far as like the company that I'm starting to deal with, you know, and like kind of their terms and like what they offer and like their communication, even from the initial like point I hit purchase, you know, and even before that, like my interaction on the website, what I thought about just the whole process in general. I thought there's some value there. So sort of like a prequel to an unboxing, I guess.
Hmm. So is this going to be a long-term relationship then?
I don't know. I've already had to sort of take it apart a little bit, so it doesn't bode well already for the Glowforge.
Compared to the K-40, I think that's not.
Yeah.
That's not too big of a thing.
Yeah.
It's not like you completely rip the bed out, change the ventilating system, cut the bottom out of it.
Yeah, this is a very minor thing. The actual button that you hit to start the print, to start the cut. Nicole, if you're listening out there, you've corrupted me and all these people. Ugh. Like, and it says print on the darn button when you click it, and it's like.
You're right,
getting,
it does.
It's getting to me. I've even looked at how to, like, edit the CSS on my end so it actually says engrave instead of print to, like, change it on, because it annoys the crap out of me. So, yes. For my laser cutter, which
Nicole
is the
says
board.
I heard that.
No, you didn't. The button you hit to initiate the job, it would stop working randomly, and I would have to hit it, like, 30 times for it to actually start. I wasn't sure if it was a hardware or software issue. I'm still not 100% sure, but I've actually sort of taken the button out of the housing, and it's like dangling off the side like a popped eyeball out of a zombie. And so I'm hitting it like that, and every time I've hit it in that way, in that orientation where it's sort of dangling, it's worked 100% of the time. So I don't know if the button is like faulty or what, but I was prepared to like rewire another button in there to like sort of help me troubleshoot it. And I mean, typically I would contact the manufacturer, especially since I've only had it for a month or so. But I've already jumped in the deep end with all these orders of ornaments and stuff, and I can't afford to not have the thing if I have to ship it back. So I'm having to see what I can do in the time being. That's a little annoying, but hey, what else is new?
So you've been busy.
Yeah.
You doing your whole ornament spiel the last time we talked totally inspired me to try the same thing here in Oklahoma. And let me just tell you, oh my gosh, it is an entirely different experience. As I've mentioned before, in the pre-show, because I wanted to be like Wes. I wanted to be like Wes and make cool ornaments to sell to people. At prices that are reasonable. And so I saw that these keys, these our first Christmas in our new home 2021, and then the name of the family on the stem were kind of trending on Etsy and on Pinterest. And so I went in and I designed one that I really liked, because compared to the ones that I saw online, I was like, oh, my design is a little bit better, I think. I added some features to it, made it look a little bit nicer, and I put it up on Facebook Marketplace, you know, trying to find people interested. And within just a little bit, I got people interested, and I texted my neighbor who's a realtor, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm making these keys. Would you be interested in, you know, giving these as gifts to all the people that you sell houses to, you know, before Christmas this year? And he's like, yeah, that would be great. You know, what's the price? I'm going to share this around to all the realtors in my company, all this kind of stuff, because, you know, they're always looking for gifts to give to people that they sell their houses to. And so I was so excited. I was like, this is what Wes must feel like all the time. And then not even 24 hours after that, on Facebook Marketplace, it just got flooded with people who must have bought a Glowforge at Michael's, because there were probably 10 to 15 posts within 24 hours of people selling the exact same thing, my design, and the other designs for half the price. And I found out that the order, one of the big orders that I got, for making some custom ones, fell through because they had a friend who just got a Glowforge at Michael's and was going to do it at half the price. And so I probably spent a week designing 15 different ornament ideas for people to just put on Marketplace, because I'm like, okay, that one won't work. It's already flooded. I'll come up with a different design idea and I'll put it out there. And I was putting it on my Etsy page, because I started an Etsy page. I was putting it in my shop. all this other kind of stuff. I just wanted to get all of my designs out there to see if I can have that Wes feeling again. And so it was uncanny that putting a design out there within not a long amount of time, within just a matter of hours, other people took that design, cut it, and then posted them for like $2 or $3 a piece.
One of the issues is that if you see something trending on Etsy, it's already too late.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why I just started like designing my own. I was like, screw this. And I texted the guys because I'm like, hey, Sean, you called it. Your prophecy has come true. This is what happened. Because I got to the point where I just pulled everything off Marketplace. Because I'm like,
I don't like being right, by the way. I didn't want to be right about that. But
yeah,
the writing was kind of on the wall when we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. And just like the initial situation, Wes, that you talked about with your neighbor, whoever it was, that bought a Glowforge for that. There's a whole another strategy has to be looked at now. Where something or the design or the complexity has to be something that is not easily attainable. Mm-hmm. Because hitting the button and copying somebody else's SVG is. There has to be some sort of skill that takes the place of this.
Yeah. So I put all my designs up on my Etsy shop to see if I can't get anything. I don't know what else to do. I can't compete with it unless I want to be that guy that, you know, goes even lower and just starts selling ornaments for $1 or $2 a piece.
You actually make the market even worse by devaluing more.
Yeah. But at least the market is good in carry. So Wes is doing good.
Trying. Yeah, somehow I found there's a local Facebook group for the town that I live in, and there are like self-referential, like little inside joke memes that have popped up over the last couple months. So I'm sort of taking advantage of a couple of those and making ornaments out of them, just because it's easy and it's very localized, and there's not like a lot of competition on Etsy on Pinterest, because it's so specific that there's no other person making them. Like there was one, I wish I had thought of this, but someone posted one a couple days ago. There was a car that somehow ended up on one of those cement spheres, the red spheres that are in front of Target. Like somehow ended up on top of one.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll have to send you the link, the picture. I think it made it on Reddit, but it was from like the neighborhood neighboring town. Yeah, it like ended up on top of it, like a Tinker Toy kind of Matchbox car kind of thing. And someone made an ornament of that. And I'm like, oh, that's so genius. But I completely forgot that happened. It was like a couple months ago. But that's sort of the thing that I think is where the quick and easy money is that it's not a national trend, and it's so like specific and niche. Like, you got to think of what communities you're like involved in, even just in a local level or small level, not super active in it, but just your audience is very honed in to maybe something specific that you could take advantage of.
Something that we didn't talk about last time, and I'm only going to bring it up here because it's relevant to the conversation, is I think with the Glowforge or laser cutting, I think we're going to see the same pattern and trend that we've seen with 3D printing and with just like making in general. We're like this, there's like this small little gold rush, and it hits really high, and then it'll fall off because people don't keep up with things for very long, especially if they're doing like a trying to do like a quick grab at money or whatever is popular or they think is easy at the moment. I think at some point there's an equilibrium that will happen again, but it's going to be a couple of years, especially since the Michaels thing. A very interesting market of those people, and I think those people aren't long-term users. So I think that's where the creativity, the sophistication of what you're making is going to matter and set you apart. It's one of the reasons why I don't do a lot of the simple signs anymore that I was doing with the X-Carve at one time. They're almost meaningless. Unless something is a really custom request from somebody, I don't really batch out a lot of that stuff anymore at all. I've been doing a lot of making lately, In fact, my wife just did her first vendor event like in 2 years now.
Yeah, I saw that. That was really cool.
And it was nice seeing her get out there again. And I didn't work the event with her, but I helped get everything going to actually have product on the table. And even with everything that was there, the main things that sold were a couple 3D printed Groots and her buttons. Nothing else sold. So, I mean, markets are different everywhere, and you know, the Etsyification, or however you want to say it, of things, and everybody trying to do a side hustle is impacting people that are trying to make a legitimate living at this.
I know.
So, well, I mean, but that's kind of where you start separating the wheat from the chaff of, you know, you do something that is not easily reproduced, and you have a lot of artistic talent, and that's something you have to draw on in a way that somebody cannot easily replicate.
I do have to show this. I'm kind of proud of this one. So nobody probably knows this, but Tulsa has its own flag that it redesigned a few years ago to have this Native American feel to it. And so it's a circle with a star in the middle and then three tribal flags on the bottom. And so what I did is I took the design of the flag and made a heart out of it, like you do. It seems like a simple thing, but I thought this was so cool.
It looks good.
And yeah, I like it. I thought this was going to sell because it's very local. It's very applicable to Tulsa and like the Native American community and the indigenous community and things like that. I'm proud of this one. No interest. But I was like, I'm hanging that on my tree because I'm proud of it. I think it's cool.
I bet there is interest, but you have to get it in front of the right people.
Yeah.
I don't think where there's a point where you could put it on online and go, okay, there it is, print money. No, I don't think it's going to work that way anymore.
Another thing that I noticed with like Facebook Marketplace, do you guys sell on Facebook Marketplace?
No. I hate Facebook.
I did a couple years ago. I haven't tried this go around. When I first got the K40, I did a bunch of Harry Potter and Star Wars themed Christmas ornaments, which I actually made the K40 money plus some back that season in less than a month. Jeez. I made like $600, I think, in like a month's time.
I think there's very small windows where people are willing to buy stuff they would not normally buy.
Yeah.
And I think it's really around the holidays or, you know, certain gatherings that are specific.
Granted, that was like 2 or 3 years ago, so it's probably all changed since then for me.
I think the custom geek stuff is still very, very marketable, though. I think that is kind of evergreen. You know, even though there's a lot of variations of it, there's a lot of it you can't get in the store. And by taking and making your own, I think there's still some opportunity there, too.
What have you been up to, Sean, besides helping your wife? Anything else?
Busy with work. I don't even know what day it is at the moment, other than that we're recording.
Did you get a resin printer for work?
I did. I ordered one over a year ago. And with everything that happened with the pandemic and all that stuff, some ordering got pushed back. I'd put in, it's kind of ridiculous, but we have a huge budget because of grant money that we get for the different things we do at my high school. So we're at the point where I have, let's say, $20,000 to $30,000 to spend. And I'm sitting here going, what the hell else do I buy? I mean, I don't have room for anything else in my classroom. I have two Glowforges. I have printers, room full of Macs and all this stuff. And it's such a weird position to be in a public school. But because we qualified for so much grant money, I'm having to figure out like other things to buy. So I bought a resin printer. I bought the wash and cure station that finally came in today. Although I didn't buy the flash forge. That's something that was happening. The switch they made at the district. But it's almost a label slap. It's almost the exact same machine as the Elegoo Mars?
No. Saturn? Or something?
Saturn. I think it's the bigger one. Saturn or the Anycubic Photon X or whatever. It's the larger form resin printer. So I got that set up today. Haven't tested it yet, but I got that. And then just trying to figure out other things to do and spend money and try to find time to actually use the stuff. Also, because I have all this cool stuff and don't have time to really use it. Because I don't want to stay at work till 8 o'clock at night just playing with the toys. been doing a lot of making and stuff, but nothing in terms of video content. I'm hoping maybe this next week I'll finally get something else out, because I've been wanting to. Yeah, I think that's about it. That's all I can remember at the moment.
So is this a good segue?
I think it is.
I guess so. And I'm just going to kind of follow along, because I kind of missed the pre-show meeting about all this.
Well, it's the idea for this topic actually came up when I was on another podcast. I was on the Because We Make podcast, and the Wes came up in conversation, like he does.
The Wes?
And what?
Did you say the Wes?
No, Wes came up in conversation. Oh, okay. And it was funny because shortly after I was on that podcast, Nicole and Turi from Langeetscraft were on that podcast as well, and they were talking about Wes. And it was just amazing, because I was like, I have kind of accepted now that Wes is connected to everybody in some way or in some fashion or another. Like, everybody knows Wes. Wes knows everybody, and everybody that knows Wes loves Wes. Not that I blame him. There's a lot of reasons why. But that said, it just got me really thinking. It's like, how did Wes get to this point where he seems to be this glue binding so many people from so many places together? Like, who is this person? And so I, when we had an opportunity, not an opportunity, that is a bad word for it. When you weren't here one week, I was like, oh, well, I can just do a one-on-one with Wes to find out who this guy is that knows everybody and everyone knows him and loves him. Like, how did Wes become Wes? And so I thought it would be fun to find out, like, where and how this all started and what it is about you that is connecting all of these people together.
It's kind of funny you bring that up, too, because, you know, I have not been contacted by that podcast that you've mentioned several times to even come on that show. Yet I've been mentioned several times. So what's up with that? Because We Make. Hello.
Anyways. Vincent, if you're listening. I think that's...
I talk to Vincent about once a week. So, Wes, you should be next on the show.
I'm just waiting. I mean... Anyways.
But, Wes.
Yes.
How did this all begin? Because you weren't here before. So there was a before. So how did we get from the before times to Wes Wayne?
I don't know. Well, it started with my mom and dad. No. I don't know. Like, kind of where do you want to start? Like as far as the making part of it, or just online sharing, or...
Well, I know this, but for people that don't know this, before you did this, you worked for...
There's a gear and sort of a tangential related thing.
Oh my gosh, I fail at being your friend. This is terrible. I should know this.
Let's try Epic Games.
Epic Games.
There you go.
I knew that. I was like, you worked for Metal Gear Solid. No, you didn't work for Metal Gear Solid. You worked for Gears of War, but... Epic Games. So before this, you worked at Epic Games. Yes.
But, well, before... Okay, so before now, I guess currently I'm still sort of a stay-at-home dad / content creator-y guy. So that's what I did before I got let go from Epic Games, if we're going backwards on the timeline.
Okay, so let's go before. If you were doing that before, like, how did the content creator thing start? Even if you were doing that, like, while you were at Epic Games, like, where is the antithesis of this? Where did this idea birth itself in the mind of Wes Wayne?
So, I think I was working at Epic at the time. And I was working on the mural for my daughter's bedroom. She had not been born yet. And it was the Yoshi's Island theme mural in our first house. And I just wanted to document that and put it online. And then all of a sudden there's like several articles and stuff written about it on like like Destructoid kind of level things, and Kotaku and other article, like other web blogs or whatever you want to call them, portals that I actually read as a consumer, and I actually ended up in an article, like a short little blurb on a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. Like, that's an interesting, you know, relationship with content that I've never had. Like, I've never been on that side of it, right? I've always been consuming the content, not creating it that others consume. So that sort of idea was interesting to me. I think that's probably the start of it. I also had a couple successful Reddit posts of my daughter after she was born. That got sort of she became a meme a little bit. And so that also was while I worked at Epic. And that sort of got more of the, it scratched that itch that started forming after I shared the nursery, in terms of having people respond to what I made in a internet sized audience. You know what I'm saying? Not in something that's like my buddy next door or family members or whoever. So that was kind of interesting and sort of addictive in a way, like having that drop of attention. Like, you're like, ooh, people like the stuff that I make. Well, that feels good, right? Like the endorphin rush when you look at the comments, back when comments used to be good, when you post something online, I guess.
It's funny.
And that project also started my microcontroller stuff. Like, this first project I used Arduino was my daughter's nursery. I created a Lakitu mobile that used an Arduino and like a little LCD screen, and it interfaced with a Super Nintendo controller that you would select songs and stuff. And that was the first time I ever used an Arduino, was for that project.
This time you're posting everything on Reddit, correct? Like exclusively to Reddit?
Not the video for the Yoshi's Island nursery was on YouTube, but I did cross promote it or post it on some subforum or subreddit. Mm-hmm. And it sort of took off from there. And it wasn't like super like gangbusters or anything, but starting from zero, that was, you know, it was something. So it sort of alerted me to, hey, there might be something there. But again, I worked at Epic and didn't have a lot of time for doing miscellaneous like projects and things. I didn't have a workshop at the time or anything, so it was hard to create things from that aspect to actually have an actual channel or anything like that. That wasn't really a concern at the time. Trying to think.
So when did connecting with people start?
The connecting people. Yes. Okay. So I had, at some point I interacted with Bob, just commenting on a video here and there. Oh, this also happened when I worked at Epic. Okay. So I'll back up a little bit. All started, now that I think about it, it all started with me canceling cable. Because I canceled cable at our house and I needed another source of media to consume. And that's when I really started diving into YouTube and like actually learning what it meant to like to subscribe to a channel and, you know, what that kind of entailed and like content creators and what the channels offered and things like that. So then I ended up discovering several different channels that I don't watch anymore. But one of them was Woodworking for Mere Mortals, so Steve Ramsey's YouTube channel. And not that I was particularly interested in woodworking. I think I found Bob's first because it was more generic. But somehow I ended up learning about a woodworking conference that Steve Ramsey was going to that was going to be in North Carolina in Winston-Salem. And so that was the first, I watched him enough to be interested to meet him, which I don't know why now I think about it, because I didn't do any woodworking at the time. And I guess, did he do a couple like tangentially geek projects? I don't remember even, maybe sort of at the beginning. I don't really remember, to be honest.
Are you thinking of Mark Spagnola?
No, definitely not.
No.
Okay.
He might have did something.
Because he's done tangentially geek projects. He has. In the past.
And I think I had been following Bob because I messaged Bob to see if I don't even remember the platform I messaged him on. It's not like I talked to the guy that often, but I think I just responded to something on some platform where asked if he was going to that woodworking conference because it sounded like other content creators were going. Not that I knew a lot of them at the time. And he said he was going and he sort of encouraged me to go. Like, it'd be cool if I saw, you know, it'd be cool if you showed up or something like that. It wasn't like mm-hmm. he knew me ahead of time or anything to, or anything like that. It just, it was enough of a additional push that I needed where I didn't feel like, you know, someone was actually interacting that wanted to see me. Even if they, you know, I didn't have any content to speak of at that point. Like, geeksmithing wasn't a thing. Mm-hmm. So we went to the, I went to the conference and it was a, Woodworking in America, I believe. It was like a traveling thing they would have at different cities and whatnot. And if I remember correctly, Matt Cremona was there and Izzy Swan was there, I think.
Wes, were you live streaming it?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I thought you were. Maybe somebody else was because I was sitting there watching it from home going, man, really? I wish I was there. Yeah, and I knew you at the time already, or at least we had already started talking, I think.
It must have been the We Like to Make Stuff Facebook group then.
I think it was.
Yeah. Somehow I must have found... I wanted to like retrace all these digital steps to see how it all started. I've tried to do that in the past, and it's the Facebook tools are terrible if you want to backtrack years to see, you know, even conversationally, like that's kind of challenging to scroll back that far with the tools they give you. But yeah, Matt Cremona was there, and Drunken Woodworker was there, and Bob, and they had a get together that Steve hosted at a, it was like a bar or some sort of restaurant, and he reserved the roof of the restaurant. It was nice out. It was like September or something, and it was just a chance to hang out with other, you know, YouTubers or whatever, and the people that watched the YouTubers. So it was like a chance for them to interact with each other, and also myself as a consumer of the content to meet somebody. And I thought that was cool. It wasn't like they were astronomical figures. It was just kind of a novelty at the time, right? They're just kind of like, oh, I interacted with you a little bit on this Facebook group or in the comments, and you know, my comment was not one of tens of thousands. It was, you know, more recognizable, I guess, because they had a smaller audience themselves at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I went to that, and I literally at that, I was so inspired with all the different people creating things. And at that time, I got a new hat here that I'm currently in that had a workshop that I hadn't really used for workshoppy stuff, but I had dabbled in the idea. And that was the night that I literally registered the domain name for geeksmithing.com. And I like, before I did that, I searched when I was sitting there. I remember searching on my phone during that event and looking like at Twitter and Instagram. I don't know if Instagram was a thing at the point, that point, Facebook and all the different social media platforms that you could have a name attached to. And I was like, I wonder if Geeksmithing is one that would be available. And it was. And that, then I bought the domain name that night. So that started it. Was a woodworking conference, like after hours party. So, and like, I didn't really have a lot of meaningful interactions besides a couple of pictures and just talking with a couple folks at that event, but it was enough to get a, you know, a name to a face that you or otherwise would not have any interaction with in the real world, like, because everybody lived in different parts of the country. And so that sort of started that, and I guess that the We Like to Make Stuff group was the, and not that we like to make, the original I Like to Make Stuff group on Facebook was the start of that. And then I remember wanting to populate that group with cool people. And so I would just scour my list of subscribed channels, and anybody random that I thought would be cool, I would blind send them a message. And that's how I got you, Sean. Yeah. I even did that to Simone before she exploded, and she was actually in the group for like a few weeks before Tested hired her, and then we never heard from her again.
I didn't know she was part of the group.
She had just got there.
I did not know. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I should look and see if I have any of those messages, like how I sold it. Because basically I just sold it as like an oasis on the internet where people, you know, let down all their preconceived notions and drama and politics, and they just talk about making stuff, you know? And that was like a cool place to interact with people of all different skill sets and mindsets. And it was awesome. And so that's how I kind of sold it. And I guess I was the evangelist for the group for a long time. And I guess that's probably how I made a lot of contacts with people.
So that's how the tendrils of the three degrees of Wes Wayne started. That's right.
And then Josh Price and Tony Rouleau and all those connections came from mostly, I think, Instagram people that I had followed at the time. That I was like, hey, I'm in this Facebook group. You should join it. Just because I want to interact with them more on like a more of a direct basis, you know, instead of just a DM box, have like actual conversation threads and stuff. And I remember I liked the PI workshop because, hey, I like Raspberry Pis. Nope, had nothing to do with Raspberry Pis. What a lie. I want all my years back of talking to that man. I was deceived. And then Tony Rouleau, he had Transformers crap that he created like in the background of his shop. It was like his logo or his profile picture or something for a long time. And I was like, that's awesome. I like Transformers. So I sent him a message, and he made other geeky stuff at the time. He didn't make any personal hand tools or anything like that. He just made nerdy stuff. He made like Zelda things and other random. He did 3D printing stuff, which at the time I never did any of that. I had no interest to have a 3D printer. And Tony Rouleau was the start of that from Hillview Wood and Metal.
So do you think most of your connections were made online or in person?
Both, because I kept attending those woodworking conferences. So they had the one that would travel to different cities, and I think I ended up going to three of those. So over the course of 3 years. And then in between those, they would have the first one was in Winston-Salem, and the second one I think was in Cincinnati, I believe, or St. Louis. I can't remember the other one. It doesn't really matter. Every time I went to a different one, I would have a new roommate of somebody that was a maker, because I would reach out on that Facebook group. Mm-hmm. So Paul Desmond, I don't know if you guys know him, but he was a guy that I had met. He was my roommate. He was my first maker roommate at any event. And so we've been friends since then. He's come to my house. I've traveled up to see him. He's gone camping here in North Carolina. Like, we've been pretty good friends since. And that kind of started like a lot of those personal interactions, like in not just across the internet. So like, again, putting a real life person to a name. So I went to three of those, and in between each one of those, they would have an event in Atlanta that was at some super sketchy places throughout its life cycle. It was another random little woodworking show. And that's where I first met Josh in person. And Andy Berkey and a lot of other folks. I think Izzy Swan, I had more of interaction with him in that venue than the first woodworking show. I get a lot of them mixed up, but yeah, that's where those shows, I ended up meeting a lot of the people that we all know as, you know, the heavy hitters and stuff, like Jimmy Duresta and Peter Brown. He was at one of the ones, I think in Atlanta. Yeah, he brought his bacon vegetable peeler and all these random things. April Wilkerson and like a whole bunch. Before they were famous kind of things.
It got me thinking about it because WorkbenchCon is coming up in a couple months. December, January, yeah. February. So yeah. I mean we can count on two hands now how far away we are from WorkbenchCon.
Before we talk about that though, I remember, Wes, you being at a very, very special party after one of those get-togethers with April Wilkerson and Nick His last name's escaping me right now, which is really bad. And you know what I'm talking about, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I think the alcohol was flowing that night, and somebody was live streaming, taking pictures, and I'm sure a lot of people hope that that's kind of like forgotten to history, but...
I've got those videos on one of my hard drives. I saw them a couple months ago.
I remember Nick sitting Ferry, on my couch watching it going, oh, that looked like a fun party.
Yeah, that was...
I kind of fell for Atlanta. April a little bit that night.
Yeah, yep. So for some reason, it was at an Airbnb. It was one of the first times I ever like had an interaction at an Airbnb. I didn't stay at it, but someone else was. And they're like, hey, let's have a party at the Airbnb. I'm like, and everybody's like, all right. So people just started showing up there. And because that was like the new hotness at the time. And I met Joel Crawford and his wife, Margot. And that was the first time I think I made pancakes for anybody was at that event because there was a kitchen. It was at Airbnb. It wasn't at a hotel. So they had a kitchen. Right. So we all like went to a grocery store and like bought a bunch of crap. And I think that's the first time I made pancakes for people. It might be. I don't remember the timeline exactly of that.
Nick Ferry. That's who I was trying to remember.
Nick Ferry. Yep.
Nick Ferry. Yeah.
Sterling Davis and yeah. And for some reason people, we were like near a soccer field or a baseball field. I forget. I think it was a baseball field and it was at night and we all walked over there cause we got tired of being cooped up in the house. It was nice outside and we all walked over across there and there was like a game that had just ended or something. And it was like a little league or some group. And somehow we got permission. It was all fenced in, but we got permission from somebody that was there to like run around on the field. I don't know who suggested that or like did the sweet talk in there, but I have footage of, I think we were like tossing footballs and stuff around and people tackling other folks and April Wilkerson was involved and other stuff. So it was interesting.
Well, it's funny because I was never at any of those events that you're talking about, but yeah, I know about all of them. Because I'm sitting there watching the live stream of all of them.
Yeah, definitely had a lot of cool. It was. You go back to that question you said about, you know, how do the connections form? It was both on digitally, but they were like super reinforced by in person ones. So I think if those in person hangouts had not occurred, it wouldn't have. They were infectious, you know, like the inner, like as you guys have felt it, like a lot of these events, like you feel like you can make anything when you leave, but you feel two things at the same time. You feel like you can make anything and you feel like you're never going to make anything as good as these other people. And like, there's like at least for me, there's like a roller coaster. It's almost like the high of Christmas and then the day after Christmas when all you have is like wrapping paper all over the floor. Like there's a down. You get such a high at the beginning and then there's such a down, you know, at the other end of it that a lot of people have like a little slump when after these, all these, you know, interactions with all these awesome people. And then you're like, ugh, afterwards. And I don't know, maybe that's just me, but I don't know.
But with you,
it's almost like a hangover, maker hangover.
I mean, with you, I think it's a little bit more than that somehow, because it's not just the connections. Mm-hmm. It's the Wes effect. You have literally like inspired people to move across the country.
That's a new occurrence.
I know, but still, like, that's not something that everybody can say because they don't have that effect on other people. But there's something about you, again, like I said, every time anybody talks about Wes, they all love you. Everybody loves you, which I think
that's awesome to hear.
Yeah,
which is cool. This is where you need outside people talking about why that's the case.
Apparently, I need a PR representative or something.
So
I mean,
PR.
I can say it from one perspective. And Wes, I think it's because in those interactions, other than you wanting to make a connection, it never openly feels like you want anything from someone to better position yourself. It's not a matter of competition. It's not a matter of you trying to get something out of somebody or social engineering something. It's simply connection, networking, and friendship. And I think that people inherently feel that and appreciate it. And that's formed some really strong bonds over the last, I don't know, 5-6 years you've been at this. So that's an outsider's perspective.
I mean, I understand why I formed a bond with you because you're a geek after my own heart. But it's just amazing how people that you wouldn't think you would have anybody in common with still know you and still like have that connection with you like you have with a bunch of other people. It was very cool to be part of a conversation and listen to a conversation and realize that like I'm part of this person's thing and how much of an impact and an influence he's had on so many people around him. And like I said, like WorkbenchCon is coming up, and again, we're going to have an opportunity to meet in person. And I would be surprised if anybody there doesn't know you somehow or is connected to you somehow. But if they don't, or if they aren't, I also would not be surprised that by the end of Workbench Conference, they're somehow connected to you. And it's I'm excited to see like how that is going to develop. Because as long as you've been at this and as long as like we've been at this and, you know, we've been doing this a couple of years, we're old timers now in terms of like content creators and YouTubers and all this other kind of stuff. And so there's like a younger generation out there who have yet to experience that connectivity, the web of Wes.
I think you sort of hit on something too, Sean, when you mentioned like your perspective of how it seemed like I don't really try to get anything out of the interaction of personal gain, like monetarily or anything like that, which is true, obviously, because I'm not, you know, I'm not succeeding as much as I would like to on my YouTube channel is one, you know, obviously in one thing, but I'm also not trying to like leverage all those connections to it's very apparent because of the lack of growth that I'm not trying to do that. You know? clearly I'm not very good at that aspect of it. Even if that was what I was trying to do.
I would argue against that. And the reason why I say that is because the first 2 weeks of my Breath of the Wild video was up, it was not getting any traction. And I made a comment about it, and you're like, let me see what I can do. And immediately the next day, it started getting traction and just blew up from there.
I can't do that for my own videos now, so that must have been a fluke. I don't know what to tell you, buddy.
No, not to take away from what Wes probably did, but I also did the same thing. So.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
All this time I've been like throwing stuff towards Wes. In
all honesty, most of it was probably whatever Wes did, but you had two people that helped push
it. I am so sorry.
No, I wasn't, Sean. I wasn't saying it to try to get, you know, kudos or anything.
It's not about kudos. It's just about like you were part of that process, and I didn't know that
talked about it. I told you I was going to do it.
Oh, God. I'm the worst.
He just disappeared.
Nicole said her Skyrim video isn't doing good, Wes. Do something about it. There's your service right there.
I almost thought about that. How do we what magic can we tap into?
Yeah. The thing that I like to get out of it, going back to that point, is not, you know, clearly I'm not good at getting something financial or like status or anything like that out of these connections. It's more of just the connections themselves and like forming like a personal bond or a relationship or a friendship, like say with different people. And or even if the friendship isn't necessarily with me, if I can connect to people that otherwise wouldn't have known each other or interacted or had things in common, or maybe they do have things in common, but they live on islands, right? And I like to be the person, the switchboard operator, like I like to refer to it.
Sometimes a literal
to connect
island.
People together. What's that?
Sometimes a literal island.
Sometimes a literal island. Yeah.
Who's the guy that you went to go visit? That lives in like a compound.
Oh yeah.
Was that?
Oh yeah.
I forgot his
Luis
name.
Luis Gonzalez.
Luis Gonzalez. That's right.
He used to be the top patron for making it podcast. They would say his name. I don't know if they still do or not, but
I don't think so.
Like every day, he used to be the Seth Williams every time. Like they would say, they would give him a shout out because he was the top patron. But yeah, that was a good example that you bring that up. Because he was a member of that group. And Catherine and I were on a cruise with the rest of her family. So two sisters and parents and other like nieces and nephews and whatnot. And we went, one of the stops on the cruise of the Caribbean was Puerto Rico. And I knew that one of the members of the group lived in Puerto Rico and in San Juan. We were going to do a stop in San Juan. So I just messaged him like, hey, I don't know, you know, would love to like high five you or something at least, because we're going to get off the boat to like look around the town or whatever. And he's like, dude, I got you. He's like, you need a car seat? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, I've got a car seat and a truck with lots of, you got two kids, right? I'm like, yeah. And your wife? Okay, yeah. He's like, all right, I got you. So he like met us at the time we got out, like we weren't even off the ship for like a minute. And he like pulls up in this giant pickup truck, a really nice pickup truck. It had like car seats in it for Grant and Samantha. But was Grant with us? Yeah, Grant was with us. It's been so long, I can't even remember. I think he was an infant. Maybe he wasn't. I don't remember. It's been so long. I know Samantha was there for sure. And we're telling like Catherine's parents, like, oh, we like trying to explain this. Like, oh, Wes knows some internet person. We're going to meet him in Puerto Rico. That sounds super sketchy. And we're going to get in a truck with him and like go have an adventure or something. It was amazing, though. Like, I don't know. I have good luck with random people. I'm still here, apparently. And I haven't had any negative repercussions from any of these decisions, which maybe I'm just lucky. But on its face value, it sounds super sketch. I know it definitely does. Like, we met up with him. We drove to I don't have to do the whole story here, but basically he drove us to like a, like you said, it was a compound, actually, now that I think about it, because we went through one like security gated fence. And then it looked like something out of Jurassic Park. Like when Dennis Nedry like breaks through the gate and like goes through like off-roading and then like goes down some ravine and has to enter a bunch of access codes to get through like the different pens of the dinosaurs. That's what it felt like. Cause we went through like two or three gated things before we ended up on top of this mountain that had a radio tower and a building at the base of the tower. And his workshop was there. Like in a building adjacent to it, and you look out and you could see like jungle and then like San Juan proper down the way. It looked like something from Jurassic Park, like the jungle, like theming and everything. Like I was expecting a raptor to jump out at me at any point, but he was like the most hospitable, awesome person. And he was like super engaging with Samantha. And we ended up having like, we went to, ended up going to dinner and stuff like in old San Juan, where she also had a place there as well. It was like some giant, I think it was related to the company he's with. It was like his family's company. But the interactions that we had with him, like, it's funny how like that one interaction, it was amazing and very memorable. And they also branched out to other things like my CNC machine. That's where I got that from. The one that you guys saw here was from him. The guy that I met in Puerto Rico. And so like people that I have taught CNC stuff, it would not have happened had I not gotten that CNC machine. It's like a whole series of like what ifs, you know, and all these like, you know, butterfly effects and whatnot. Like Tony Rilo, like within a month later, he sent me a message like, hey, I got invited to this dude's house in Puerto Rico. What's the dude like? Is he going to kill me and stuff? And so he actually flew Tony down there to do like, cause he has no maker buddies in Puerto Rico. All of them were on the internet. So he would like literally fly people down to like hang out with him because he could do that, which was crazy. And I think if there was like a series of checklists for someone to become like a supervillain, he checked like all of them. Like he was the nicest guy, but all the other like red flags were there, like gated compound, like several different, you know, it was kind of nuts. It was pretty cool. I hadn't thought about that story in a while. It's kind of funny you brought that up.
He was a cool guy. I met him, and I don't even remember where I met him.
Oh, I know where you met him.
Was it Maker Faire?
Because I was there. Yeah, Maker Faire, yeah.
Okay.
He was at William Lutz's house.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
See, you learn something new every time you talk to Wes. It's funny. I scrolled back to the first messages that you and I ever exchanged with each other, and wouldn't you know it, are you in the Facebook I Like to Make Stuff group? And then the follow-up message, final question of the night, would you be interested in coming on the Making Geeks podcast?
Wow, that was fast.
Yeah, that was you move fast, man.
Pretty forward, yeah.
Well, that's fun. I could do this again. We should do Sean next time. Love to hear all the stories, the Sean stories.
There's going to be quite a bit of overlap, though, because a lot of it is because of Wes. Not 100%, but I was already heading down that path, and then Wes was kind of like that last little bridge into the bigger world.
That's awesome.
It all started with a pizza party. Not all of it, but a lot of it started with a pizza party.
Actually, it started a little bit before that, but the
it
pizza
did.
Party was
that helped.
Was also a big thing, too.
Yep. Yeah. And a CNC machine was involved.
That's right.
See?
The one that I didn't win.
Pizza?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Invenables was giving away CNC machines. And Sean Farbolin won one.
That was the second year.
Was that the second year? I thought it was the first year.
I think that was the second year, because that was the Carvey machine, and they hadn't had that.
Oh, that's right. Because I remember they called Sean. I'm like, yes! They said Farbolin. I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the second year.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, cool. That was fun taking
that was fun.
Into the web of Wes.
And I think there's probably more that goes with that too. But
maybe, we ran out of time.
Maybe some more reflection, and we'll come up with that.
I like it.
So, what are you guys geeking out about?
Spider-Man trailer. Did you guys see that?
So no? I wasn't going to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched it,
mm-hmm.
and I'm glad I did. And the reason why I wasn't going to watch it is I really didn't want anything spoiled, even though there's already speculation of all of it. But I was afraid they were going to actually show something, and I still want there to be some element of surprise. But luckily,
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, but luckily enough, what they showed, I don't think spoiled anything.
It was just an extension of what they showed on the teaser.
It was, but it seemed so much more epic. And even my wife was like, oh my god, I can't wait. I'm like, yes. Yeah, we're all really excited about it here, too.
Although, with all the speculations and everything, they have not come out with a Lego set or a Hasbro toy that spoils the major plot point of that movie. So I think all that speculation is just smoke. I don't think there's anything that's going to happen in that video, in that movie.
That's just my guess. I think there will be major backlash if there isn't this time. I don't think this is a Mephisto situation.
No.
I think that there are actual things, and if there's not, I think there would be major repercussions from the audience.
It's a super missed opportunity if not. You almost have to question like their motives. Like, why would you not do this? Because they basically did it
they're
in the Spider-Man
the
animated movie. Perhaps.
But if anything, I think the disappointing thing might be seeing the other two only for a brief portion of time in the movie. I don't think they're going to have a big part in the movie. I just don't think there's time for it. I think they're going to make a little bit of an appearance to help at the end. Hopefully, I'm not... Well, I just said it, but yeah.
What, disappointed?
No. I was going to say that if I'm right, you know, then that's like a huge spoiler, but...
Well, I mean, all right, if you're concerned about Spider-Man spoilers, drop the podcast now. We're going to talk about it a little more.
Okay.
Is that what you want to talk about? All right, this is your chance. 3, 2, 1.
Okay.
So the rumors that you want to talk about is Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield being in the next Spider-Man movie, right?
Correct.
Yes. I think there's something there because for several reasons. The one that's very compelling, did you guys see the Brazilian, like, Sony account that pulled footage after they posted it when the trailer got released?
No, but I saw the thing about the effects where some of the characters were reacting to something that wasn't there. I'm aware of all that.
Yeah. So if you haven't heard, Donovan, there's a shot where they're showing... Have you seen the trailer first off?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So at the very end where it shows all the different villains, you know, and Spider-Man swinging towards them, you got Sandman punching and Lizard and all that, Electro, there's a shot in just like... Not that exact trailer, but a version of the trailer that was released in Brazil, or a snippet of it on their Twitter page. There's a shot where you can see that same shot. It's just like an additional second or two before or after. And you see the Lizard jumping in the air, not towards Spider-Man, which is in a different spot on the screen. He's like jumping, like there's nothing to explain who he's jumping towards, because like the sight lines and the action lines are off, right? And he's jumping, he reacts like he's getting punched in the face. And there's nothing there. And it's not like misinterpretation of maybe he got punched, maybe he didn't. No, it's like a vaudeville, he got knocked the F out, like reaction, like slow motion with his head getting spun around. Like he's clearly getting like clocked by somebody. And there's nothing there. And that footage came out as soon as the trailer dropped, so there wasn't time for someone to go in and re-edit it to make it like any shenanigans like that. Because I was waiting for that trailer, the main trailer, to drop. And as soon as I watched it, there were people in the comments saying, oh, did you see this? Did you see this? And people had already screen grabbed it before they could pull it off. And if there was nothing to it, then why did the Sony Brazilian like account pull that footage if there was nothing there? It's not there anymore. But someone grabbed it and took it. And it's compelling. We'll just say that.
I think if I hadn't seen Into the Spider-Verse, I'd probably be more excited about this one.
I agree. I can
but
see
like
that.
I'm just like, yeah. Oh, they're just doing Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Okay. I think I'm even more excited because of Into the Spider-Verse. I think there's kind of like a proof of concept in a lot of ways that unless they don't
do it.
Right.
Then you're gonna feel like you're ripped off.
I would like to maintain there's even other surprises that we're not aware of. But I'm trying to pump myself up too much.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I got burned by the last Marvel movie. But I hope there's a little bit of redemption here.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
I'm telling you, you guys should do the spoil cast. Just do it. I am geeking out about Nicole and Turi. Their new video came out today, which is the giant Skyrim map that they made for the 20th anniversary of Skyrim. Is that right? 10th? 15th? 20th? 11th? The anniversary of Skyrim was today, and they launched their video, and it is fantastic. The video is great. The project is amazing. If you have not watched it, go watch it now. When Geeks Craft, giant Skyrim map. It is, you will not be sorry. You're welcome.
I'm geeking out about five different things, but I can't remember what most of them are right now. I had a different one for each week that I wasn't on the show. but the one that's fresh on my mind that I wanted to talk about a couple weeks ago is a video from Andrew from AG Does It. He's been on the show. I think it was one of the weeks I wasn't here, but he was on the show quite a little while ago. He put out a video of making a sign. It looks kind of like a neon sign, but it's done with the flat LEDs. And the project itself is really cool, but what I'm geeking out about is his style of shooting the video. And I thought his style and the way he shot it and the camera angles and the movement was really fantastic. And it kind of made me feel lame. I'm like, you know,
why?
Here I am with a static camera and I'm not moving it much. I'm doing anything fancy. And just the attitude and the style in which he shot the video, I thought was amazing. And the music that he used. And it kind of made me feel old at the same time. Like, man, I don't know what it means to be hip anymore because this video was. So if he still listens to the show, that was an awesome video. And I can't wait to see more. So that's mine. But we would also like... I'm going to butcher this. Let's see if we can keep the interview going. All right, we would love to hear from all of you. Go to makinggeeks.com, check out our webpage, our website, and the contact page. You can list any questions or suggestions you have for the show. And on the homepage of the site, you can listen to all of our past episodes right there at makinggeeks.com.
And if you have suggestions for us individually, not just as a group, as we do here on the podcast, you can find us doing our own things. Wes, with all the stuff that he's doing with the Glowforge, you can find at Geeksmithing. Sean, with all the stuff that he's doing with the Glowforge and now a resin printer, you can find on Geek Builders. And myself, with whatever I got going on at the moment, you could find it Once Upon a Workbench.
With a pail of mud and some spoons or something? Yeah. we'd also like to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/makinggeeks for their contributions. Every time we release an episode, they put their money where our mouths are, and we definitely appreciate them for doing that. It helps us do things we wouldn't otherwise be able to do. We want to give a quick shout out to our top patrons, Jordan Rimple, Square Splinter, and Clinton from C3D Prop Shop. Thank you guys so much.
And you can find new episodes of the podcast every Saturday morning on your favorite podcast player of choice. We'd like to thank everybody for hanging out in the live chat with us. Always make the show a lot more enjoyable and a lot more fun seeing the live comments come in as we're on here bantering and trying not to mince our words, which happen quite often. Yeah. So from all of us to all of you, and especially going into the holidays, have a fantastic week. Be sure to spend some time with friends and family and be safe. We'll see you soon.
See you next time.
Bicycle.
Hello, Nicole.